episode of the South Sea Folk Podcast is sponsored by Alice and Ivy South Sea. They're an independent skincare, makeup and wellness specialists, and they're based on Marmion Road and are open Tuesdays to Saturdays. You can find out all the information about them on social media. I love the fact that they're an independent shop that sells independent products from independent businesses around the UK. What's not to love? Give them a follow and try and find out a bit more about them.
Welcome to Claire from Repair Cafe. How are you doing?
Good, thank you.
Thank you very much for coming on. We're just going to dive straight in. Tell us all about Repair Cafe.
Okay, so Repair Cafe actually started in the Netherlands. I think it's probably about 14 years ago now. I keep saying eight to people, but I've been saying eight for a long time, so it can't be eight anymore. It was a woman called Martine, and she was really frustrated that people had broken stuff and didn't necessarily know how to get things fixed and didn't know their neighbours in the sort of community. And so she brought people together in a community hall and said, like, if you've got broken stuff or if you're good at fixing, come and sit together. And that is very much the ethos of Repair Cafe. So we set up in Portsmouth 5 years ago now, and it's been a monthly pop-up, the third Saturday of each month, and people bring along their broken things. And it's not that you just dump it and run. You come and you sit, like we're sitting either side of a table today. You would bring in your, I don't know, maybe it's your broken lamp.
Yeah.
And you sit with one of our amazing repairers and you guys work out if you can fix it or not. And it's not just electricals, we do clothing, we've had bits of furniture, all those kind of things. And it's really aimed at how do we make things last longer. Although we do also collect data on that and sort of campaign on the right to repair. So getting tech to last longer, you know, there's a lot of stuff we can't fix. And we try and we're absolutely not about competing with the repair businesses in the city. So it's about filling the gaps where, you know, where would you get a kettle fixed in the city?
I don't know, to be honest with you.
No.
I'm sure there's somewhere down here in Albert Road, but
well, we haven't found it.
Yeah. We haven't found it. Well, we know now, don't we?
That's really interesting.
Exactly. But those sort of like, you know, cheap things, things that are really cheap to replace as well. Yeah. So that's what the world and the culture has created, hasn't it? Like if your kettle breaks, you go and buy another one. If your printer breaks, I mean, actually good luck if you're trying to fix a printer, they're not really made. And there's lots of things that aren't made to be easily repaired. And or if it is like an IT thing, like a laptop or a phone, we say, if you want to come because you want to learn how to do it, rather than taking it to the brilliant businesses in our city, you know, come and we'll share some knowledge and, you know, do things together.
You know, with the programme, the repair shop, has it made people think more now? Has it made people think, yes, I want to go along almost for the experience in a way, to come along to the repair cafe and think, I'm going to sit and I'm going to do this? Has there been an increase of that?
So there's definitely been an increase in the love of repairing old special things.
Right.
Which is not really what, I mean, we do get some things that are old and special, but the repair shop is like a whole different level. And actually, whenever I go to community groups and or schools and talk about Repair Cafe, I say, like, who's watched the repair shop? And, you know, loads of people put their room in and I say, okay, just forget that. That's not really what, like, Repair Cafe is like the neighbourhood version of just your everyday things. But we do get some lovely special things that you obviously probably wouldn't equally take along to the repair shop. But it has increased people's awareness that you could fix things. But I think really the more precious older things, memory things, rather than every day. I've never seen a kettle on there, for example.
Yeah, no, that's true. No, I just wondered because I do love watching that, and I do think it just makes you think about it, doesn't it?
I think it does. I think it's also good for just improving people's problem solving skills. You know, if it's something as simple as my kettle doesn't work. Why could that be? And then spending just that a bit of time to try and solve that problem. It could be the fuse needs replacing. And then you were saying, like, you know, our society has been conditioned in this kind of way. We can always just throw it away. We can pop down a range of big branded stores. You can pick up a kettle for probably less than a tenner these days. But then not thinking of, well, what happens? What's really now going to happen with that item we've discarded? You know, it's almost like we've kind of just gone, but we don't really focus about that. And I think what you're trying to do here is great to bring that message to people.
Yeah. And there's a lot of things as well that people don't. So, for example, we get a lot of vacuum cleaners along. There's actually nothing wrong with a vacuum cleaner. It's just we haven't got that sort of inquisitive, or, you know, we're sort of told, I think, you know, be careful what you do. You might get electrocuted. Well, actually, if you're just taking apart the hoses and the filter in your, you're in no danger. I mean, maybe breaking a nail or something like that. But actually, we've sort of, I think it, that sort of exploration and giving it a go, it's quite a niche thing to do. But actually, you know, like we do loads of stuff using like YouTube videos and iFixit website where people have, you know, gone before, because of course every model is slightly different. But some of it's just about, like you say, I mean, a lot of people don't know how to check a fuse or change a fuse or know what fuse it should be. Or so because we don't know, then we don't want to dabble just in case, you know. But actually having someone there when you bring it in and says, you know, explain a little bit about it, empowers you and gives you confidence. And we've had some brilliant stories of people who have like come along to get things fixed and now volunteer with us because they just love the fact that they've increased in their knowledge and they want to learn a bit more, or they can buddy and, you know, do things together. So it is quite addictive once you start.
Yeah. Cool. So how can people get involved in the city then? What would you like people to do?
So we're actually taking it to a whole new level this year, which is very exciting. And Cascades Shopping Centre have kindly given us some space there. And so we've just been doing the Repair Cafe on the third Saturday of each month, which is very limited, obviously. If your kettle breaks on the third Sunday, you've got a long time to wait for that. Yeah, exactly. So the idea of the hub in Cascades is that we will be have more sessions where people can bring their things along to. And because we're all about reducing carbon at the end of the day and making things last longer, we're also opening a library of things there. So it's sort of a two-pronged approach. So if you bring any drill and we can't fix it, and you don't use a drill very often, you might want to borrow one instead, for example. So at the minute, we are just in the early days. We're all volunteers. So anyone who's got things to donate, there's some information on our website. We're looking for things like, you know, ladders and drills and all these kind of things that are ideally working. Not the things that we have to repair first, but for people, it's amazing what people have got in their cupboards and their sheds that they don't use that people are interested in passing on. So probably actually looking at that is one of the main things. And if you've got repair skills, we are always looking for volunteers who are good at fixing things. Because it might just be that you've got a few hours once a month that you want to come along and help, which is great.
Yeah,
we've got lots of people who've like become managers and then don't get to tinker so much. And they enjoy like coming along and just doing that. So we're really interested at the minute in any volunteers who are good at fixing things.
Well, that's cool. I mean, we had a conversation earlier, didn't we, about kind of, you know, when you use a wallpaper paste table, but you unless you someone that car boots constantly, you're never going to use it again. So, you know, it's just a really good concept to be able to get people to come down and say, oh, I really need that and I'm never going to use it again. Too many people do buy things, don't they, Claire, and they only use it once or twice, and what a waste.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things. So tool libraries have been going around the country for quite a while, but the library of things is a bit much broader than that. And as you say, it's those things you use infrequently. Also, some of the things that maybe you think, oh, I wonder if I'd like to use that. So a perfect example, I think, would be a bread maker and a pasta maker.
Yes.
Like how many people have gone, oh, yes, I'm going to take up making pasta. Then you make pasta once and you're like, yeah, let's just hide that back in the cupboard. And maybe one day I'll make pasta again, you know, when I have 6 hours free or whatever. So the other thing is actually the idea of maybe try before you buy. And the whole concept is being kind of a member of a community. So we're all sharing stuff. So you borrow it for a week and then you bring it back and you might want to borrow something else. But and like you say, a wallpaper pasting table, I should think most wallpaper pasting tables have been used for car boots and maybe never seen any wallpaper.
Yeah, you do often see them there, don't you? Every other table seems to be a wall pasting. Wallpaper pasting table.
Yeah.
And things like, you know, a wallpaper stripper.
Yeah.
That's another thing, isn't it? Like you'd use that and then you would never need to use it for a long time or ever again.
Yeah. And some of the bigger industrial tools, like, I mean, I've recently sanded the floor of my house and that, you know, I borrowed those from a local. There was no way, of course, I was going to buy one of those for that one-off job. And, you know, there's no space to store something. I mean, it's just, in my mind, that's a ridiculous thing to think of doing. It's those kind of smaller bits, though, like a drill or, like you say, you know, a steamer to remove wallpaper that you think, oh, well, I might use it once. But if you, and ideally you would also know someone that you could borrow one off, but we're there kind of catch those that you don't know someone to borrow one and people will borrow.
So What are your top three sustainable items that you think that you couldn't live without? That seems like quite a random question to come from what we've just talked about. But in my mind, is just thinking, I feel like when I think about myself as a sustainable person, you know, I'm on this level, but I know that where you are and how you're thinking in your mindset, Claire, is that you are, you know, on a higher level than me. So I'd love to know. It's just like a random question.
Okay. Well, the one thing I'd first say about you is we're all on a journey. So yes. There's no levels in my mind.
I love that.
We're all trying things. I was saying earlier, I used to run the Surface Against Sewage Plastic Recycling campaign, and people, you know, that single-use plastic, it's just overwhelming if you try and remove all the plastic from your life instantly. You know, it's just and actually totally unrealistic. So I always say to people, like, everyone's on a journey. Let's just keep on it. Like, don't do something and then go, oh, tick, you know, I'm not going to fly this year. Tick, I've done. I've saved all my carbon. You know, think, what could you do as well as that? But for me, actually, so sustainable living, I think it's more of a mindset than the things. So the first thing I would say, actually, is the most important to my sustainable living or attempting to be sustainable is pausing. So just before doing anything, actually just stopping and thinking, hang on a sec, is there a way? Well, first of all, do I even need this thing, if it's a thing, or, you know, what I'm giving my time to? Because that's the biggest thing, you know, there's this, what is it, reduce, reuse, recycle. Mm-hmm. But we kind of, as a culture and as a country, and even as like our governmental targets, it's all about recycling. And recycling is meant to be the last thing, you know. So the first thing is reduce. Like, do I really need the object? Or, for example, my kids, you know, if they want to do something, okay, but it's miles away, how do we get there? Is there an alternative, you know, or how could we still get that experience? Or, you know, if it's a thing, could I borrow it, for example, because I'm not going to use it often? And then I sort of go through this little thing in my head of sort of like, so first of all, do I need it? If I do need it, what's the best way to get that? And obviously there's all the things involved in, have you got the time, have you got the money, and how to do it sustainably. So there are often some very more sustainable options that are totally out of my price range, for example. So you can't feel guilt on those things. You just do what you can do. Obviously local, trying to buy local, or if, you know, if you can't borrow it and you need to buy it, always thinking kind of, how can I support the local community first over buying it? Mm-hmm. But actually that is a, you know, pausing is a really challenging thing in our society. So we've been talking about this when we've been planning the Library of Things. You know, people are really used to Amazon Prime, which means you don't really need to plan, because, I mean, so I personally boycott Amazon, but my understanding is with Amazon Prime is that you can kind of think, I need something shortly, and it can almost turn up at your door before you've...
By the end of the day.
Yeah. And actually, so...
There was a lot of that in lockdown, wasn't there? There was a lot of people that bought a lot of things off Amazon in lockdown, wasn't there?
And quick. Like, it's that speed thing. And actually, the speed is what is totally unrealistically... There's just no argument for it being sustainable. Mm-hmm. And unless it's life-threatening, you probably don't need it that instantly. But it does require us to plan a bit more. So that involves us having time to just pause and think, you know, so if I am thinking, oh, I'm going to paint that room this weekend, planning ahead and thinking, okay, it's next weekend I'm going to do it. So let me think, okay, if I've got time to look at what's the best paint, for example, or can I borrow the stuff? And can I get some friends around to help me do it? Or, you know, whatever it might be, make it more fun.
Yeah. I get that pausing thing, because actually we're in such a fast world all the time. People don't spend enough time to pause, do they? So that's a really clever point, that.
Yeah, and you just made me think, actually, I've got some things arriving from Amazon Prime today.
It's very technical.
But what I'm thinking of is you've just kind of painted the picture for me, like a memory from like when I last ordered from them, and what I no doubt will see later on is very speedy, very quick. That sort of customer aspect there is really good. But they turn up in the biggest transport van you've ever seen, diesel juggling thing, and they're just all around town. And I just think,
what about the packaging
and the packaging
and the packaging? But I'm even just in terms of the fuel part of it. You know, I suppose you can stop to think about that. You know, and if you are going to order from somewhere like that, you need to order in so many different deliveries. And if you are. You're getting a delivery 2-3 times a week or a couple of times a month, whatever it is,
the more times you're ordering, the knock-on effect is the more times they're going to be turning up in this diesel juggling massive transport van around the city. So I think that's a really nice thing to contemplate.
And the stuff that you're buying, I have no idea what you're buying today, but all the stuff that you're buying also has, you know, when you look at tech especially, the majority of the climate impact of that is actually in the manufacturer. So it's like for a smartphone, 72% of the climate impact, the carbon emissions, is actually in the manufacturing. So 72% of that is before it's even got into your hand and you've started using it.
Yeah.
So all these things, like even so on the sustainability factor, like how repairable is it, is a really interesting question to pause and see. And France is brilliant because they actually now have like a repairability index. So when you buy something, it, you know, like here, when you buy a washing machine, it tells you the rating, energy rating.
The energy, yeah.
Yeah, in France, they also do that now for repairability. So as a consumer, you can go, oh, okay, so I'm buying this phone, for example. Well, you know, I have to have a Fairphone, which is highly repairable. They made it intentionally so it lasts longer.
Yeah.
And I can be involved in that and have that information. Because that's part of the challenge of trying to live more sustainability is having the time or just access to information.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point.
Yes, and we do live in a world where it's everything is so fast and we're kind of sold more the need to have something rather than the want. I mean, I'm very happy with my smartphone and I've had it now for 2 years and I've got no intention of changing it for probably at least another 2 years. But yet as consumers, we're almost told every year we have a new handset coming out. You need this.
Yeah.
But there's not much of a development from the last model. We know that the camera might be slightly better, you know, the memory might be slightly faster. But what's that really going to do?
And in Europe, there's a smartphone sold every 7 seconds. And the stats would show that actually on average they are kept for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And if we could extend the life of a smartphone, all those smartphones in Europe, just by 1 year, it's the equivalent of taking 1 million cars off the road.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Which is like unbelievable.
But yeah, there is no real need to be releasing one every single year.
No.
You know, you could do it every other year. And that's what always makes me laugh about you. Tech companies, it's almost quite contradictory. Like, we want to be sustainable, we want to do this, and we're planning billions into making, you know, our products a lot more, you know, friendly, but yet you're still releasing a phone every year and 4 different versions of it.
Mm-hmm. But what I was going to say, isn't it that Apple, like, I've got my iPhone and I love it and I don't want to change it, but they make it where the battery gets so bad that you don't actually have a choice but to upgrade it because it's to do with the battery life. Like, you start off with your iPhone and it's like, you know, it'll last 24 hours and then you've had it a couple of years and you've got to charge it up 3 times a day for it to actually work.
Although some of that, I mean, we'll be careful what we say about Apple.
Okay, yeah.
When it comes to the right to repair.
Smartphones.
Yeah. All kind of variety. But it's interesting. So, for example, my kids, they're of the age where they now have their own phones.
Mm-hmm.
I've got old iPhones from them. I personally wouldn't ever buy an iPhone. But I actually am able to. So my daughter's phone was from a friend's son. And it literally today, last few days, has started to just suddenly drop out. You can actually replace the battery. It's an older version. It's not the simplest repair I've ever done, but I have actually done it with the power of the internet and showing and some tools. And like, you've got lots of shops around Portsmouth that they will do that for you.
Will they?
But Apple doesn't really tell you that. And what's interesting is some of the designs within Apple, there's this thing called part pairing, and this is not just Apple, but they design it so that if you replace a part, unless you are there deemed professional repairer with their special code, you actually need software for your hardware to even recognize that you've put this new part in. So there's one bit, for example, on one of the phones in our family where I've replaced the home button, but because I've replaced it as a community person, as someone that owns that phone, I am not deemed to actually own it enough to be able to repair it myself. And so the thumbprint recognition, like, I can't do that bit. It has to be someone specialist.
Yeah, I've changed a few batteries on those smartphones myself, and they are not. I love a challenge, but wow, is it a challenge? Because you know,
you're technical though. I mean, I have no chance.
No, but even with like, you know, the way to even open one,
Yeah.
You know, I had to look up how to even open one. And to open one, you need very specific tools, which you can get on online auction websites.
You'll be able to borrow from the library of things.
You can borrow, yes, exactly.
Or pop into a hub in Cascades and sit there and do it.
Yeah. But you have to be, you know, they're getting a lot smarter with this. You know, you can put a preferred party battery in there. I remember I replaced it with a preferred party battery once, and it lasted probably about a month or so. And suddenly the back started swelling up. And in the end, I had to bite the bullet, take it to the brand who fixed it and were very helpful, very happy to do so, charged me a good £80 to do so. Sounds a lot, but it was either £80 or I spend another £500 on the phone. And I'm not saying I love all the technology, I really do. But I don't need to be replacing this every couple of years. You know, my first MacBook I had for like 10, 11 years. It was bulletproof by the time I sold it. Couldn't upgrade the software anymore, but the guy bought it off me. He didn't bother him. He said, "I just need to use it for WordPress." Mm. Mm.
I was the same with mine. I had mine for 12 years before I had to replace it.
I think it is that as you say, it's pausing in. It's just stop, think, reflect. You know, what are the kind of repercussions if you just threw that away? Which then leads me into my next question, which is, you know, with all the people that come to your store and that. How blown away are they when they are given that information of towards end of life devices and that, you know, the amount of energy and resources that go in to trying to recycle that or even like landfill, are they kind of blown away? How much goes into that?
I think it's more actually that stat that I said earlier about how much is in it before, because actually the end of life, although there is a cost to recycling and what's fascinating for it. So, I mean, sticking with the phone example, you know, there's lots of elements and minerals within that actually, if we can recycle them and use them, you know, they're used for all the solar panels, you know, there's lots of repurposing of things. But I mean, I think people are really frustrated, not just in the city, but, you know, around the country of how hard it is to get things recycled, which is why I think people are really passionate. If they come along to us, they've invested a bit of time, obviously, coming. And they're interested in just like, how do we make this last for longer? Because I've bought it as well. You know, when we have people that, taking the kettle, for example, it's just like, I can't afford to pop to the local supermarket and buy another one. And I'm really frustrated because I only bought this a year ago. And, you know, it's often just after the warranty's gone.
Yeah.
Like almost the day, it seems sometimes. But people get really passionate about it. And we're a tiny charity, and and when you come to Repair Cafe, it's all done on donations. And we say to people, like, can you just, you know, obviously it costs us to do all this kind of stuff. Can you leave a donation that is suitable for, you know, what you can afford? And people being really generous, and people are often up for signing the petitions, you know, around the right to repair, and people are really passionate about it. But it is, I think people are more frustrated by how disempowered they feel to be able to make a difference or even get into some of these, aren't they? Like a hairdryer. I mean, they're made so that you cannot get into them without breaking them. It's for your safety.
How about things like watches?
Watches? We haven't had any watches, actually. I mean, the watches, I think there's good jewellery companies in the city that will change batteries and those kind of things. So, yeah, we haven't had any of them. We get a lot of lamps. We get a lot of...
Well, we're going to say, what's the most popular? Would you say the most popular thing that you get that comes to the repair cafe?
I mean, lamps is high up there. Lamps, vacuum cleaners, steam cleaners, those kind of, you know, washing things. And they, I mean, lamps actually generally fairly easy to fix, which is quite nice, because we can have sessions where, like, listen, some of the repairers will have sat there and not managed to fix anything. We get a lot of hair straighteners as well.
Oh.
I think, again, and it's down to product design. It's interesting, I was talking to someone who studied product design at Portsmouth Uni, and we were saying it'd be great to get students in who are designing products to actually just see some of the pitfalls.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, because actually when you're using the product, things don't last so well. And one of the things I'm frustrated about not getting more of is fabric repairs. And I think it's going to be interesting being within the Cascades environment, obviously, where we've got much more window space and people see us more than when we're hidden away, you know, once a month, obviously, don't expect so much. I don't think it's that they're all going to the tailoring businesses of the city. I just think, you know, there's also a massive carbon impact and water and all those kind of things of fast fashion.
Yeah, definitely.
And actually exploring how do people get things to last longer? How do you tweak an outfit so it's a bit different because you don't want to wear it again exactly the same way? And some of this stuff is just made so cheaply that it doesn't last very long at all.
Maybe you could collaborate. I mean, what I'm wearing today, this is Hannah Southsea. Yeah, and she is amazing. And yeah, she did a workshop here just before Victorious. She got these old shirts and we sort of converted them into little tie, little tops that you could wear. And she's really good. So maybe you could collaborate with sort of cool people in the city and, you know, sort of focus on that.
Yeah, we've got, so the hub that we've created actually is going to have, it's going to be quite adaptable so that we can have workshop space. And that is one of the things. We have a lot of women over the last 5 years that have asked us, could we do workshops on how to use power tools? Like, I'd like to use a drill and know how to do it. Yeah. And others that are saying, actually, yeah, how do I upcycle an outfit? So for us, it's all about reducing waste. You know, how do we find ways to make things last longer? So, yeah, in fact, Hannah Sass's name came up just the other day for someone else. So she's definitely on my radar.
Oh, so she's so lovely. But it's funny you say that about power tools, because I was thinking about that, like, with my husband. Like, he does all of that thing and I don't. And I'm quite confident at decorating and doing most of the things, but I've never really used a power tool. And I think, you know, what about when women, when they sort of maybe split up from the partners, or if they become a widow and they don't know how to do that? It's just such a good idea.
Yeah. And I just think it hasn't necessarily been passed down the generations, these skills, or, and all of it is, you know, you don't need a master's degree or anything to use a power tool, but you just need someone to show you and to give you some tips. And actually, for example, drilling a hole in a Portsmouth wall is not always the simplest thing because of the shingle and the beach that seems to be and old mortar and everything. But yeah, just having someone to show you and giving it a go just builds confidence, and that's partly what we're about as well. So we're not expecting everyone to come back constantly with their lamps, for example, because it's like, once you've learned about fuse, you can do that yourself, you know. Or once you've learned how to put a zip in, or, you know, you can do it yourself.
Yeah, that's really cool, isn't it?
And sometimes people forget that you can go on YouTube and pretty much get an answer for everything, like anything these days. I mean, brilliant, like, educational platform for things like that, but some people just need that in-person guidance, don't they?
Yeah, and it is quite different. I mean, a bit like your experience of doing the phone battery. I mean, I feel very stressful doing it until I know that you put it all back together and it works.
Yeah.
Anything, actually, I would love to just sit with someone for a couple of times to do it the first time, because it is just about getting it going. And it's sometimes hard to see all the things, isn't it? Like on the YouTube, and you're like, okay, pause, rewind.
Yeah.
There's nothing better than human contact and actually learning from someone that has done it.
It just reminds me, though, because my dad was Irish and he came from a really tiny village in the middle of, like, the countryside. And when I was growing up, he always fixed his own things. And I remember him fixing the television once and going, I need everyone to go and stand outside in the garden.
Just to get
I'm going to turn it on now. But in those days, people did fix things more, didn't they? They just did, didn't they? I just think that was quite funny.
You do gaffer tape it back together.
Things were sometimes a bit easier to fix. So we do also get old things coming in. And, you know, I mean, it's much easier to fix a really old sewing machine than it is a modern sewing machine and things like that, you know.
Yeah.
Because partly because obviously the tech moved on, but also the barriers to repair, you know. Some of these things, they don't want you to repair them, they want you to do it. So
I'd really like to see the clothes thing, because, like, I've got a dress at the minute and I love it, and it's just, like, frayed at the back. And I was thinking of taking it to Hannah and getting her to repair it for me. But to think that if there was somewhere I could go on a Saturday, pop in and get it, I just think that'd be really cool. Or show, I'm not very good at sewing, but maybe have a bit of confidence to try things.
Yeah. And bring the kids along,
because I would never have a sewing machine at home and keep it there all the time. But you can go somewhere and then actually repair it yourself.
Yeah.
That's quite cool, isn't it?
Yeah, so you'll be able to, like, use the tools that are there, or you could borrow a sewing machine for a couple of weeks and take it back. And, you know, like, it's the holiday or something coming up and you think, oh, let's do it with the kids as well and pass on some of these bits. And I mean, kids are brilliant at picking some of this stuff up. And I keep trying to convince my kids to, like, really learn how to repair mobile phones. I'm like, you could pay for yourself through college and university just by fixing everyone else's kit, you know.
Yeah, and we would probably get the help. It would be so cool. So for people at home that have not been aware about the Library of Things, it's in the Cascades. Is it what was the old British Home Stores site?
Next door to that. So we're between Sports Direct, which is where I think the HS used to be, and there's, like, the toilets and a nail bar, and we're just squirreled in there. In fact, everyone keeps going, what has this been before? And it's been empty for a very long time. So I think it was a shoe shop once, it was a poster shop many years ago, and it looked like a kids' play area, but it never opened for a very long time. So we are breathing new life into it.
And do you need donations from people out in the city of things to go into the Library of Things?
Yes. So if people go to our website, which is shareportsmouth.org.uk/donate, there's a list of things, which last year we spent time finding out from people in the city what might they like to borrow, and it's kind of based on that. And we do ask that we don't just become the place where people go, oh, yes, I've got a whole shed of stuff.
Go and dump it there.
Dump it there, yeah. Yeah. Like, we're not the recycling, but we will help you, tell you where you might be able to recycle some of those things, or, you know, what to sell on eBay or whatever it might be. Mm. But, yeah, ideally, obviously, at this point, we need things that are in good working order and that people could borrow, ideally with instructions, but that's not going to work. We can write instructions.
Oh, that's right.
And we're just starting out. At the minute, we are all volunteers. I've managed to get some funding to actually employ someone as well, which is very exciting. But so our opening hours will be evolving. So we can sort of say, look on our website, or, you know, don't rock up with a very heavy sewing machine to be fixed to then discover we're not open.
No,
for example.
I get that. But you're not open yet, so you're in the process. So look out over the next kind of, you know, it could be a couple of weeks, you know, 3 weeks, a month, we're not quite sure, but it'll be soon, won't it?
Yeah, we're hoping to open sort of quietly in the middle of April. And then as I get employ some people as well, maybe extend their hours. And the plan is to be open Wednesday to Saturday, sort of, I don't know, maybe something like 10 to 1 or something like that. So that we start where we are. We're not going to become Amazon or something where we're open all the time. You know, you do have to plan that.
I think, well, definitely Southsea people are like, you know about that, because there's hardly any independent businesses open on a Monday here. I think people are kind of, they're used to that, aren't they?
Yeah, it's just it's just about checking before you turn up and send yourself a message. But we'd love to see you there once you come and have a look around.
Oh, absolutely. We're definitely coming down, aren't we, Kev?
We definitely are.
Yeah, so thank you so much.
Yeah, thank
today.
You ever so much. It's been wonderful to meet you.
Thanks for having me. It's been great.